This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Saying cuss words, guys. It's inappropriate and violent. If you say a cuss word, then you're like going to jail.
Hi, I'm Madison Malone Kircher.
And I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it,
Slate's podcast about internet culture. Oh my god, Madison, hello. It's been a while.
It's been like a lot more than 1 week since you've looked at me, actually.
It's been, despite the fact that you may have heard us together as recently as last Wednesday when we talked to Jessica Lucas, it's actually been about 2 weeks since we've recorded together, which is the longest we've gone without recording together since the show started.
Since you left me to go to Paris.
Oh.
Yeah, how soon we forget.
Désolé.
But since we have been apart for so long, I did come back to an inbox that was simply overflowing.
Yeah, we're not getting to inbox zero anytime soon, but we're going to try.
What Rachel and I are saying is, of course, it is time for another round of, drumroll please, read receipts.
Read receipts.
I want to see the receipts.
We have got some fascinating questions for you this time. And by we, I mean y'all had some fascinating questions for us this time. On today's show, we are answering y'all's burning, flaming questions on everything from why people think that Wes Anderson is a fascist to resurface tweets from online personality tinks. The no more saying cuss word guy, and more.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime. Day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. So right before we recorded this episode, we put out a little call for questions on Twitter. And quite literally within seconds of tweeting, we love you so much for doing this. We had at TVL replying with the words, Wes Anderson fascist question mark.
Art, poetry, a novel.
I mean, it's just as artful as a Wes Anderson film.
So I've been offline of late, which has been very delightful for my brain. But apparently, what I missed during those beautiful days, perhaps I should have stayed offline, was that people have been talking for the last few days about whether or not fascism has any influence over the work of Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson, of course, being director Wes Anderson, lover of symmetry, lover of a pastel, lover of Tilda Swinton. So movies like The Grand Budapest Hotel, Moonrise Kingdom, The Darjeeling Limited, The Royal Tenenbaums, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
So what's going on? What happened? Why?
So it actually all started when Twitter user at ReproUtopia tweets this. Watched The French Dispatch. It convinced me Wes Anderson has crossed over decisively from what was previously possible to condone as, quote, apolitical world of winking whiteness and poignant quirkiness, end quote, into a fascist trivializing of struggle and active investment in the carceral state.
That's a lot of 25-cent words.
ReproUtopia continues, I imagine everyone already said this at the time. Forgive me for my very belated observations. That shit about May 68 and the other shit about the incarcerated artist who saves the art dealers from rioting inmates made me sick in my mouth.
That's extreme. Before we go any further, I haven't seen the French Dispatch.
I did see the French Dispatch, so we're covered.
Great. So is it fascist? Did I miss? I thought it was about the New Yorker.
There's multiple plot lines in this movie, or not even multiple plot lines. It's several micro stories. It's almost like if it were a book of short stories, but it's a film of short stories that don't overlap. Mm-hmm. And there's one that takes place in a prison. So to get back to Repro Utopia, shoving through the jargon, what she's basically saying is that the aesthetics and storytelling of Wes Anderson, particularly in The French Dispatch, give off a fascist vibe.
What was the reaction to this take from people who I assume have seen this?
Very, very mixed. Mostly people jumping in about why this person is wrong. A handful of people, as per usual, making fun of the take itself. Mm-hmm, but there were also, shockingly to me, people defending this take who seem to really understand the lines that Repro Utopia is drawing between the films of Wes Anderson and fascism. Huh. Which I'd like to remind people is deadly. Literally.
Yeah. So is there, how do you say, evidence for this take? Or is it simply just steaming hot?
Well, that's the thing that I found interesting as I fell down a rabbit hole after Googling, as TVL put it, Wes Anderson fascism? Question mark. Because, okay, puts on liberal arts college hat.
Ooh.
For a brief moment. You could make the argument, right? These meticulous, hyper-stylized worlds that Wes Anderson creates, you know, they are all about order and uniformity and and organization, which one could, I am not one, but one could make a fascistic argument.
Okay. I feel like we're getting into the realm of, like, comparative literature and aesthetic
discernment.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is an argument I might hear in, like, a grad studies course.
Oh, yeah. This isn't even a new take, is the other thing I have learned. People have been making these connections and using this argument since, like, The Life Aquatic came out in the early 2000s and, you know, 2004. So it's been...
Wow.
It's been a minute.
That's a long time. I mean, I feel like Wes Anderson is one of the kind of few directors we have nowadays who have such a specific style that you immediately know you're looking at a Wes Anderson film when you're watching it. And so I'm not surprised that people are analyzing his specific aesthetic choices. I mean, they're clearly there to analyze.
To bring it all back to TVL's question, Wes Anderson fascist? No, yes, maybe. People have been talking about this for a while. People will be talking about this for a while to come.
AKA, we didn't actually answer your question. Well, we're going on to the next one. Maybe we'll answer this one. Our next question is from @CarolineLoop. She says, I am begging y'all to address the Tinks tweet situation.
Before we get into the aforementioned tweet situation, we need to do two things. One, full disclosure, we have run ads for Tinks' podcast on our show in the past. And two, I think an introduction is warranted. So Tinks, that's T-I-N-X, sort of like the period underwear, but minus the H. Tinks has a real name. It is Christina Najjar, and she's a social media influencer who got really, really big during the pandemic, like out of nowhere. She's always talking into this teeny tiny little microphone, and I think the first video of hers I've ever seen was her doing, like, sort of satire, sort of not, of, like, how to blend in with, like, rich West Village mommy types.
You're going to be a Venice Beach rich mom, so here's what you'll need. A subtle $25 million LEED certified home, constructed entirely of reclaimed wood, dripping in Jenny Kane boucle furniture. Like the walk streets beyond Abbot Kinney. Somewhere quaint where you can walk the dog that you lie about adopting but actually got from an expensive breeder in Vermont.
She's done a lot of those. I think she's done one on Brentwood. Just, we love a rich mom aesthetic.
She lives in LA. She has a really, really loyal fan base. And as happens, when you get famous really fast.
Yep.
And everyone listening to this podcast, I know you know better because you listen to this podcast. But Tinks did not wipe Tinks' social media footprint. So somebody went through and surfaced a bunch of her old tweets and likes and posted them to the subreddit Tinks Snark. Snark subreddits are very common for popular influencers. It's basically where everyone's movement is tracked, and if you put one toe out of line, they chop it off. So that's a little bit about Tinks. Now let's talk about the tweets. We're going to read you a few of them. These have obviously since been deleted.
In 2012, she writes, Kim Kardashian is so fat, I don't know what to do with myself. Hashtag oops. In 2013, she writes, fat people at Coachella, LOL. 2014, she says, who is Tori Spelling? She seems really ugly and pathetic. 2016, we've got interesting disparity between hashtag Theresa May and hashtag Hillary. TM seems like a real politician, whereas HRC comes across as an exhausted show horse.
There were also faves as well as tweets, which are also public. But if you're listening to this podcast, I know you know that. And those from Tinks ranged from faving kind of troubling early takes about the pandemic and its severity and, xenophobia. Just light things, fun things, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's retweeting praise of Donald Trump and Boris Johnson, also retweeting Hunter Biden propaganda. It's not the best. Also kind of jarring given the fact that her reputation as the kind of big sister of TikTok is predicated on her being pretty progressive.
Right. I mean, that's the other thing that these tweets and faves have allegedly uncovered is that she's potentially a Republican, which is not so much about her actually being a Republican, though obviously we have thoughts. It's more that that ethos is so not in step with the same woman who holds up that tiny microphone and is like, and then you're going to get a table at Bouvette. And actually, maybe it is. Maybe she was being honest all along. All of this is pretty gross. It's pretty unsurprising, frankly. But after the tweets come out, Tinks does, of course, what an influencer does when they are caught out, a Notes app apology. She posts this Notes app apology on Instagram about how she was young and said a lot of dumb stuff 10 years ago that was cruel, but she was, again, quote unquote, young, 21, and in a bad place, and she's working to be better.
Yeah, sure, whatever. But the thing is, weren't there some 2020 tweets is a thing? Like, there were some tweets as recently as, oh God, that wasn't last year. As recently as 2 years ago.
The faves about the pandemic, for example, there's mm-hmm. that's a timestamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The biggest timestamp, some might say. Has she responded to this?
She did an AMA on Instagram where she just cherry picked questions. But someone asked, please just address the 2020 tweets. And she posted a story reply that boiled down to her being in that same dark place that the rest of us were in when the pandemic began. And she just wasn't thinking clearly about what she was liking and retweeting. She was just reacting. And she should have done more work and feels awful for engaging in all of it.
I, too, was in a dark place when the pandemic began. And I just read a lot of romance novels. So
I ate a loaf of banana bread every other day.
You got to get your potassium in.
I believe Tinks would say something fatphobic about that. Hashtag oops. Actually, that hashtag I think is the most damning thing she tweeted or liked because it is a tacit acknowledgement that she knew. She knew.
Ooh. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Either way, thank God Tinks still has a huge fan base. We've got a few more questions to answer, but first we have to take a quick break to eat some banana bread. When we get back, we'll be talking about cussing, the funniest word on the internet, and Sister Cindy.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Cole.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
If you love our podcast, then consider subscribing to Slate Plus. It means you'll get no ads on our show or any other Slate podcast, and it means you'll be supporting ICYMI. Our show would not be possible without that support. Slate Plus really helps us keep the show going. You'll get bonus segments or extra episodes of shows like Slow Burn, Amicist, Political Gab Fest, Hang Up and Listen, Mom and Dad Are Fighting, The Waves, Big Mood, Little Mood. See, you want this. You'll also get unlimited reading on the Slate website, which means access to every article and advice column on Slate without ever hitting the paywall. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+. All right, we're back, damn it.
Hey, no more saying cuss words, Madison.
Our next question comes from listener Amy.
Hi, ICYMI. This is Amy from Denver. And my kids just showed me this video of a little boy saying, no more saying cuss words, guys. And I was just wondering if you could go into telling me a little more about it. Thanks. Bye.
I am so excited that this is back because this is an old internet standard. And it's just genuinely very funny. So here's a little bit of it. If you've not yet met no more saying cuss words, guys, kid.
No more saying cuss words, guys. It's inappropriate and violent.
So in case you've not seen this video, which we'll be sure to link in the show notes, it's a video of a little boy. He's in a striped t-shirt sitting on like what looks like a couch or a recliner in a living room, talking directly to the camera, telling people to stop cussing. You can hear some sort of adult in the background. It's extremely adorable, a little dogmatic for somebody so young.
So this sound has been going around on TikTok for years. The trouble is, as happens a lot, is nobody actually really seems to know where it came from. All the uploads of this video on YouTube are from meme video accounts who are notorious for not showing where exactly they got their content from. And the earliest dated video is from March 21st, 2020. If you are the child or know the child in this video, let us know.
The user who posted it on YouTube back in 2020 actually mentions in their description that they found the video on a Discord server and couldn't find it on YouTube, so they uploaded it, which is to say it has been lost to time, like the library at Alexandria.
The thing I love about this specific mystery is that I feel like at this point there are very few things on the internet that we can't quite pinpoint where it came from that's in a video format. Like the grape stomp lady, obviously, you don't know who that lady is and you want to know.
But I do know. That's not actually a mystery. Does the grape stomp lady want to speak? No. But we know she is.
Okay. So, but we don't know who this child is. And I love that for us. Even though one of you will tell us who it is. For right now, I love the mystery of it all.
So I actually have a theory, though, as to why this video is surfacing again now, such that Amy would be seeing it on her Kids For You page.
Tell me a theory, Sherlock.
Okay, it involves iCarly.
Oh, I know where this is going.
So there's a really popular sound going around on TikTok right now that also involves the word cuss, which is just a funny word.
I actually do cuss a little.
Do you?
Also, yeah.
What's your favorite curse word?
Probably fuck.
That's Miranda Cosgrove, who you probably know as iCarly, the titular role from Nickelodeon's iCarly. And she's appearing on comedian Whitney Cummings' podcast back in 2020. In March of this year, though, YouTuber Jax Jr. uploads the clip to YouTube, and then it makes the leap to TikTok. And it's funny.
But it gets better.
It does get better, because what does TikTok do so well?
But make an incredible remix that has been in my head for at least a month now.
I actually do cuss a little.
Do you?
Also,
yeah. What's your favorite curse word?
Probably fuck. Probably fuck. Probably
fuck. It's just so good. It's my favorite thing in the world.
It is really hard to not dance to. And by dance, I mean I'm 100% in bed watching TikToks, but I'm like popping my shoulders a little bit.
Yes, yes, exactly.
There are a couple of other remixes going around TikTok, but that's my personal favorite. And so, in my professional opinion, that is why the unknown little boy who is averse to cuss words is circulating on TikTok right now, because Miranda Cosgrove actually does cuss a little.
I can't argue with that red string theory.
Case closed. Our next question comes from listener Mel.
Hey, ICYMI. So what's the deal, Sister Cindy? I came across a TikTok of her getting escorted off the UCSB's campus. And then I turned to Twitter and only found random tweets about UCSB can't be saved. And oddly enough, feet pics of Sister Cindy. What is going on? Thanks.
We do want to note that Mel mentioned UCSB, but Sister Cindy's brouhaha actually happened at the UCSD campus. So we're in San Diego, not Santa Barbara. One letter, very easy mistake to make. I know nothing about California geography.
I love this question. It's phenomenal. A plus work. Thank you, Mel, for giving me the chance to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is those wild evangelicals who spend their entire life wandering around college campuses telling girls not to be sluts.
That sounds personal, Rachel.
I love them because they're just so funny, but also because they turn into campus spectacles, which is really their point. Like, are we just encouraging this? But let's get into Sister Cindy specifically. Sister Cindy, her real name is Cindy Smock. She's one of those fire and brimstone traveling evangelical preachers who, along with her husband, Brother Jed, travel to different schools, basically trying to get girls to stop being hoes.
How does she do this? What's the game plan?
Oh, the game plan is a thing called Sister Cindy's Slut Shaming Show.
Say that five times fast.
I can't. Her merch, she has merch, says shit like ho no mo, and also hell is hot, don't be a thought, which I would 100% wear that last shirt. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. I'm not gonna buy it from her, but I would wear that shirt. Here's a clip of what a typical Sister Cindy slut-shaming show sounds like.
Professional prostitute can't even make a living anymore because these college girls are giving it away to any boy who comes up with a mop and a bucket. But never fear, Sister Cindy is here to roast you and your hoe friends.
I have attended many, many a frat party in my day. And perhaps it is other things about me that kept this from happening, but no man ever approached me with a bucket and a mop. That's a wet-ass pussy.
My favorite thing about that clip was Sister Cindy being like, I am concerned for the fact that sex workers can no longer make a living because of these hoes on campus. Sister Cindy's all about sex workers.
Look, I am likewise concerned, but it's more about tech platforms than
We have a lot of concerns co-eds. About that. So Sister Cindy and Brother Jed have been traveling to college campuses for quite literally four decades at this point. Like,
wait, what?
Yeah, it's been, this is not new in any way, shape, or form. They're a well-known phenomena.
Who I probably would have never heard of if it weren't for TikTok. Shut it down.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you would have heard of them because they would come to your college campus. You just wouldn't know their names. But basically, yeah, TikTok has provided Sister Cindy a new platform. The Sister Cindy Slut Shaming Show has gone viral on TikTok many times. The hashtag Sister Cindy has almost 300 million views at this point. She currently has almost 500,000 followers on the platform. She has a Cameo account along with her merch store and TikTok account. The thing that is unclear here is how much of the virality is people who actually believe what she's saying versus people who are ironically just engaging because they think that it's funny.
Oh, I'd assume almost entirely the latter.
I would say mostly the latter, but I don't know. Having grown up on the internet, having seen people be ironically racist for years and then turn out to be actually racist, I just feel like there are some true believers in the Sister Cindy camp.
Hell is hot. Don't be a thought.
Have you heard Bible rap? That's the same thing.
Yes, and I had promptly blocked it out of my brain. All right, so back to Sister Mel's question, though. What happened at UCSD? Sorry, I had to. What happened at UCSD?
So the usual thing, which is that a Sister Cindy sighting has become a bit of a bit at this point, in that lots of people troll her for views, but who's really getting trolled here is a good question, because Sister Cindy has admitted that on some level her slut-shaming show is satire. But on April 18th, Sister Cindy showed up on University of California San Diego's campus, and in the process gathered a huge crowd, like easily a couple hundred people just circling her. And at what first glance reads to me, as a person from the South who knows Christian culture, as a kind of baptism, but is actually just people listening to laugh and jeer at her. And things escalated when students started harassing and, like, stealing things from her. And according to a tweet from the UCSD student paper, Cindy and her husband left campus after receiving harassment and were escorted off campus after calling UCPD, which I am assuming means...
Campo.
The camp cop, yeah. But the reason Mel came across those UCSD can't be saved tweets is for two reasons. Some people were actually horrified by the ways that these college students were treating this woman and calling the behavior despicable, to which I would respond with, speech can also be violent and hateful, and it behooves us to remember that before condemning the response to said rhetoric.
That behooves? Next year to tell me you think Wes Anderson's a fascist.
But majority of the posts are as ironic as Sister Cindy's following. They say shit like, UCSD broke Sister Cindy and I witnessed it all with my own eyes. Which, it's true. She was bullied off campus, basically.
I mean, Twitter is notoriously a place where people are genuinely concerned for the well-being of others. So it makes sense that everyone is genuinely concerned for Sister Cindy.
Oh, yeah. I've never felt more loved and cared for than on Twitter. All right, that is the show. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so please subscribe. It is the best way to never miss an episode, never miss a call out for questions for a Read Receipts episode. Please leave a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. Tell your friends about us. None of y'all have hired that Skywriter yet, but there's still time. You can also follow us on Twitter at icymi_pod, which is also where you can DM us your questions, like Wes Anderson fascism? You can also always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader, Rachel Hampton, and me, Madison Malone Kircher. We're edited by Allegra Frank, and Alicia Montgomery is executive producer of Slate Podcasts. See you online.
Or in San Diego. I have a lot of questions about calling each other Sissy Cinder.
Sissy Cinder.
Oh my God.